Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Erin, get out of the toilets, bro. Ben, hey, Ben Smuff, go get Erin. He's going in the bogs. I just got to make a call, bro. Oh, please don't answer.
Richie McCaw.
Oh, hi, Richie. It's Kieran here, mate.
Kieran, great to hear from you. How does it feel to have 19 straight international victories?
Richie, I need you to sit down, mate. I've got something to tell you.
Hello, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, joined in studio with Phil.
Hello, JB.
And of course, Tim, down the line. Where are you, Tim? Are you in Bath or are you in London?
I'm in London.
Oh, in the big smoke. Lovely.
Yep.
And we've got loads of rugby internationals, Anglo-Welsh Cup, Toc H chat, reasons we're not in Chicago chat, all that and lots more still to come. Tim, do you have a iTunes review for us?
Well, I do, and I would highly recommend. Just all we ask, in fact, is take one moment of your time, your very busy time, as if you enjoy the podcast, to leave us a review like Just Kate 23 has done, who says, first-rate pod, sharp-witted, funny and informative on all rugby matters like the Avicii Premiership or the not-so-pro 12. Keep it up.
Yep.
But maybe, how about an endorsement that's good for your female listeners? So Cornerstone, I think Cornerstone could do a good job on your legs, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Cornerstone razors.
Oh, absolutely. It could do a good job on your legs. If you need to shave your Alsatian, it could do that. Hamsters, it can do anything. I mean, it's not just human, both sexes it works for. It works across species too.
Absolutely. And we are the only organisation, we're completely in favour of funding research into testicular cancer and trying to solve that and raise awareness. We are the only rugby organisation completely against Movember.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've not done Movember. Have you, Phil? You don't look like you are.
Definitely not.
Are you, Tim?
I'm freshly cornerstoned with my award-winning Cornerstone razor,
exactly,
which,
right,
if you haven't sampled it, it's the best in class. And you're using a substandard product if you're with Gillette, Wilkinson, Sword or any of the others. So get the best for as little as £4. If you haven't tried it before, use the code. Well, go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
Egg10 at checkout.
And then for as little as £4, you could get your free aluminium engraved beautiful Cornerstone shaft.
Yes, and if you want to join up with Beer52 as well, that code is Rugby10. It's not... Hang on, is it Rugby20? Oh,
rugby,
I don't know.
Rugby20.
Rugby20, yeah.
No, it's not Egg20.
Is it Rugby10?
It's Rugby10. It's Rugby10.
Ah.
So for all of you people who were confused last week, who wanted some excellent subscription beer delivered directly to your house, which doesn't include Salty Kiss, it is Rugby10. Egg 10?
Yes.
Well, one of them. Just use them all. Use them all, it'll be fine.
Anyway,
where shall we start, boys?
Oh, just one more little review. Gilbo Baggins said, as a millennial and a student, I'm entitled to a great number of things.
Yes, you are.
At long last, I can add top-notch rugby pod to that list. The best rugby, if not best sports podcast out there. I'll take rugby, but I'm not having the best sports pod. No way.
No, no.
It says, JB's the Welsh maverick fly half of the operation. Dodgy opinions included. Phil, the safe hand scrum half, dropping hard facts. And Tim, when he can be bothered to be in the studio is, but fortunately, due to the miracle of Skype, can sprinkle some stardust. I've been likened to being the winger of the operation. I'm not sure about that.
You're like the Rambini. Or, no, not Rambini. What's the other guy called?
Rupeni Foul Foul.
Rupeni Foul Foul.
Yeah.
Always on walkabouts, mate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Skyping in from the Fijian jungle.
Exactly that. Exactly that. There's only one place to start, isn't there?
Chicago.
And Chicago. Let's not talk about the game so much as let's talk about the fact we all were desperate to be there. It was Phil that instigated us really not exploring the opportunity of going.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So, me, Phil, not yourself, Tim, but our good friend Stephen, we went to the kind of inaugural game, like the precursor to this one, which was USA versus All Blacks. Didn't go too well. Just prior to the World Cup, USA got battered by the All Blacks. We've been trying to go every year since, and this year was our year to go. And Phil decided against it. He said, no, it's not worth it, and it won't be a good game, so therefore we can't go.
Do you think those were my exact words? Is that how you remember it?
That's how I read it. That's how I read your actions. So we couldn't go.
Do you know what's been so painful watching us? Is obviously, it was a historic and amazing occasion.
Everything, even the weather.
Everything, but the fact the Cubs had their grand parade after winning the World Series in Chicago a couple of days ago as well.
Yeah, we were sharing some text with the Red, White and Black Eye, the American Rugby Podcast boys, this week, because they just happened to stumble upon the Cubs parade, championship winning parade.
I can't believe we didn't go. I'm so annoyed we didn't go. But I give you my word, if there's ever another top flight match in America, I'm going to go. I'm going to go. Never going to miss another one.
Yes. Good. I'm not sure it's quite fair that I take all of the blame for this.
No, it's completely fair. It's completely fair because you took all of your holiday on honeymoons.
No.
Yes.
When
mini moon, honeymoon, marriage, it just became something you wouldn't do.
Yeah, it's just snowboarding something ridiculous.
Now, when Tim couldn't go 2 years ago to Chicago, did you blame him then?
No, we just went without him.
I'd watch the difference. Why? So you can only blame yourself, you and Tim, because you didn't go without me.
No, no. The difference being, Phil, is that every time that I leave the country, I leave with one of two people. Either my wife, because she organises all my travel and holds my passport, or you, because you perform effectively the same function. I pay you the money and you book everything. Literally, the last 20 times I've left the country has been with one of those two people.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. We do need someone. You can't expect.
How do you expect me to take myself abroad?
Exactly. People listening to the podcast will understand when they hear things. You're the glue, Phil. You're the one that organises all the accommodation, sorts out the flights. Even with us talking about going over to Dublin for some of the autumn internationals, you're the one that's come up and given us all the details. Anyway, let's move on.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move past that. Do you want to talk about the game for a little bit?
Well, okay, let me ask you a question about this game. Is anybody, or should I say, let's phrase it a different way. Is anybody's favourite player in the world at the moment not Conor Murray?
He was incredible.
Oh my God, that's the best performance I have seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, he was from everything, from his try to his defence, his hit on Surveyor, his kicking, his controlling of the game, his utilisation of the forwards, everything was as close to perfect as it gets.
I'd say
it was brilliant. It was brilliant. The only other two people, I mean, the whole team obviously were outstanding, and it's wrong to single people out, but Zeebo and Carney had their best games in green for at least a couple of years.
Oh, Zeebo, ever. He's never played better than that.
Yeah.
And he never will.
I go with both of those. I thought Sexton was masterful for the 60-odd minutes that he was on the pitch.
I agree with that. I've also got a theory that Joey Carberry was the only way they could win that, because like then the naivety of youth, he just comes on, not flustered. Got
He's so
to lose.
Chilled out, isn't he?
Yeah. You pointed this out to us from the Under-20s World Cup last year, Tim. He was brilliant.
When he put his boot to ball, I think his first kick out of hand was sublime.
And this, going away from the game for just a fraction of a second, it's a massive bugbear of mine. Because you've got the IRFU, you've got the young talent with the masterful old head, Carberry learning off Sexton, and that is going to be brilliant for Carberry. You've got the potential at Ulster. You've got one of the wisest old heads in the world in Ruan Pienaar, and the RFU should put whoever they think their most talented young nine is at Ulster, learn from the master, and instead they've ignored the opportunity and exiled him.
It's ridiculous.
Anyway, that's me complaining about...
Something completely unrelated, but yes, I see your point.
My only complaints would be, it was a brilliant occasion in Chicago, biggest ever crowd that's watched a top flight match in the USA, but it did mean you had US broadcasters who are still the cameramen and stuff don't fully understand the game. So you, like during the Haka, for example, all it was a close up on TJ Perenara's head.
That's fine by me. I'd rather watch that than the Haka. I turn off the Haka. I turn it off now.
I would rather just focus on the island team during the Haka.
Oh, is that the best response to a Haka ever?
I'm surprised they didn't get fined for it because they're showing like cultural offence to the Haka. You've got to line up 10 metres away, show it deference and nod your head and do nothing in response.
The number eight formation, though, with the four Munster boys front and centre in the number eight as a little mark for Axel Foley. It was at that moment you sort of thought, oh, maybe. But to score 40 points against the All Blacks.
Well, it's
really... Do you know when that last happened?
Oh, no, I don't.
I knew you'd know, though, Phil.
I do. I can tell you it's only ever happened five times that the All Blacks have conceded 40 points or more. And the most recent was 2004. Not happened since then.
2004. Was that England?
I've not got the game to hand. I don't think it was England.
Huh. Wow. And Ireland become only the sixth international team ever to beat the All Blacks.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the actual game itself, did anyone think they were sort of playing cat and mouse with each other? And by this I mean, it was very peculiar to see a top flight team, and maybe I've just not watched enough rugby lately, but I doubt that's the case. They weren't guarding their rucks in any way. So
New Zealand or Ireland?
Neither team. They had one guy either side, and that was it. And I was like, someone's going to go around the fringes now. Any second now, someone's going to try and snipe. And neither of them did until Conor Murray did. And the only reason that he was able to do that was because CJ Standard rightly noticed they've only got two men either side, blocked one of the guys, Conor Murray dummied, and went in. It was really weird.
So I didn't notice that about the rooks, but I did notice, particularly on the Ireland team, their decision-making around the rooks. And it's something that we see Saracens do quite a lot, which is they don't compete at the rooks unless they think they've got half a chance, and then they throw about four or five men in. And if it's that half chance, everyone goes in. Otherwise, leave it and fan out. But like you say, maybe fanning out a little bit too much.
Yeah, well, that's what caught the All Blacks for the Conor Murray try, definitely.
Yeah.
And the other thing which was very interesting as well, it was the kicking game. It felt to me like Ireland thought, hang on, is it Naholo, Naivaro, or the other one?
It was Naholo, Waisaki Naholo.
Waisaki Naholo was weak end of the high ball.
Yeah.
They probably had the points. And I think they thought the same about Surveyor.
Yeah, they did. And they used it to great effect. I mean, the Zeebo take was absolutely sensational from a Murray.
Oh, but I love that.
But also, not just that, the number of times where Smith or Naholo or Surveyor took the ball and then had two men immediately on top of them and weren't able to do what they usually were.
Mm. A couple of observations for this game from me. One, Andy Farrell, the impact he's had on that Irish defence is massive. And when he has a proper alpha male boss who will keep him only to his area, he's a really class operator.
Yeah, so we've eliminated Andy Farrell for the England World Cup debacle.
It seems like
And from New Zealand's point of view, and I almost think it's a little bit unfair to... Some people have been going, oh, New Zealand didn't play well, which almost feels a little bit unfair in the wake of such a great performance for Ireland.
Yeah.
But Jerome Kano, that experiment at lock completely backfired. They didn't have a line-out platform in the first half.
Yeah.
And two big wingers for New Zealand is not the way they should be playing. They normally have those two kind of full-back players in their back three. Sorry?
Why do you think not two big wingers?
Well, because they just lost that aerial battle completely. They didn't have kicking options in the same way, and they weren't as competent under the high ball as Ireland were. They normally would have Milner Scudder or someone, another one of those sort of more skillful players in the back three.
Israel Dagg, someone like that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I can see that from a positional point of view. I actually think they were slightly... So I can see that from the kicking side, and Ireland exploited that well. I actually think that going forward, they probably didn't have as much front football for the wingers because the centres kept on getting injured.
Yeah,
that's true.
And they ended up with Ardie Surveyor lining up in the centre.
Did they? Did that actually happen?
Cody Taylor was packing down at open side.
I said, "What? They should just put Dane Coles anywhere. Stick him anywhere."
They should have done.
Aaron Smuth. That backfired as well. TJ Perenara made a massive difference when he came on.
Yes, I think he did. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I just wonder though if the real reason the All Blacks lost was because Ireland looked at this game completely differently to everyone else, which is we cannot stop these boys from scoring. We have to score more, and you have to just go all out attack continually. And then when that second wave came through, I mean, has there been an All Blacks game of late? Can you think back when they haven't had a second half absolute shower of points?
No.
So we knew it was coming, and it did come.
It felt like it was going to be completely unstoppable.
Yeah.
That comeback, when it was something like 30 points to 9, and then they score, immediately again, and then they get a penalty. And yeah. Uh-oh, it gets to 33-29.
Is it dead?
This is it. This is game over.
Yeah, it's like Game of Thrones, you know, when they kill the beast, but they don't burn the body and it comes back to life. Like, what? Burn it! Keep kicking it until it stops moving. And that's what they did. You know, a lot of teams, I think, might have gone into their shell and tried to protect that lead.
Yeah.
And they just carried on going.
Well, they kept on with exactly the same tactic, which... It wasn't quite all-out attack, but it was incredible intensity. And they kicked a huge amount. They kicked more than twice as much as New Zealand did out of hand.
Is that right?
And they ran for way less than half the number of metres as New Zealand did. Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'd be interested to know where they ran from. So, were New Zealand running from within their own half?
Well, the territory and possession were 50-50 in the game overall, but it was... Two-thirds, one-third to Ireland in the first half and two-thirds, one-third to New Zealand in the second half. So Ireland had the dominance first half and then New Zealand did have the dominance second half.
Ah.
But in terms of where they were running from, I'm not too sure. You don't get that breakdown of stats, unfortunately.
No, yeah, I was fortunate to spend time with Brian O'Driscoll at the Leinster Cast European Cup match a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he said that Ireland... had this date in the calendar for months and months and months, and this was their whole, a lot of their processes pretty much since the World Cup, everything's been leading up to this one match. They were putting mentally everything on the line for this one match, which I thought was quite interesting. So I suspect what might happen in a couple of weeks, you're going to have a butthurt All Black team just rip Ireland a new one.
I wouldn't be surprised. And I'd love to know the figures as well. If the next Ireland All Blacks game isn't the most watched test match certainly for the Autumn Internationals, maybe ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, maybe I've blown that out of proportion completely, but that's what I think.
Oh, it won't be far off. Everyone will want to see that game.
Yeah. It's going to be dynamite.
You two can't make it, can you? We've possibly got tickets.
Yes, I need to. Thanks to our friends at Canterbury. I want to talk. Let's talk about that off pod.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. All of a sudden, this feels like a much more attractive proposition.
It certainly does, doesn't it?
It really, really does.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Off pod discussion noted.
Yes. Agenda point number one. Can I just say we're going to be. People, you're going to be listening to this podcast and we're all going to be waking up in a world where Ireland have beaten the All Blacks.
Yep.
Japan have beaten South Africa. England went unbeaten in Australia. Ireland won in South Africa. Connacht won the Pro 12. Georgia went unbeaten in the Pacific Islands. Argentina beat South Africa at home and Brazil beat the USA. What next?
Brazil beat the USA?
Yeah.
I know what's going to happen next, Tim.
Clermont are going to win a final?
Nope.
Australia lose to Wales?
No, Argentina are going to beat Wales at home in the Millennium Stadium.
Yeah, that's happened a
comfortably.
That's happened a few times.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen next. I know, actually, would it be more surprising if I said Wales are going to beat Argentina in the Millennium Stadium?
Yes.
Is that the outlier?
Oh, man.
Just in terms of the game, a couple more points on the,
yes,
on the Ireland-New Zealand game. Ireland only gave away 4 penalties in the entire game.
Okay.
Which for an international game...
That's astonishing.
That is incredible.
Astonishingly low. New Zealand gave away 12, so New Zealand gave away 3 times as much. But that discipline is enormous for Ireland. And also, so we know it's the first time in 111 years that Ireland have beaten New Zealand. They've never beaten them before in an international fixture. Gordon Darcy tweeted, did you see his tweet?
No, what was it?
Yes,
which
yes,
said,
I did.
Nobody beats Ireland 29 times in a row.
Very good.
And there was another couple of brilliant bits. So there was a brilliant picture doing the rounds of Paul O'Connell right in the middle of the crowd.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just fist pump in the air. And then there was also another one of a big crowd of Irishmen outside a bar in Chicago with a banner saying, God took Axel to tackle Jonah. Which is a lovely little touch. I liked it.
And well, the last time that an Irish team beat the All Blacks was the 1970s Munster team, which had Axel Foley's father playing at lock.
So there's
a double link there.
Yeah. I wonder if the picture of Paul O'Connell was celebrating after the All Blacks scored, because obviously now he's not involved. He also be remembered like as the greatest ever Ireland player.
Yeah.
Or one of, at least.
Yeah.
Come on, quite boys, possibly. You're nearly back in it.
Hey, right, so another thing, we're waking up with the world rankings. Well, it's Sunday night as we're recording this, but I've got the rankings that will be published tomorrow morning. So a very quick little game. You two can try and... you can't see which hand I've got a coin in. So, Phil, left or right?
left, please.
How about Phil goes first?
It's correct. Phil, so you're going to go first.
Yeah.
So you're going to say the team ranked number one.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll see how... You can go alternately and see how you do going down the list. So, number one, Phil.
I'm going to go, controversially, New Zealand.
Correct.
Do I do two?
Yep.
Saracens. Have I ruined the game?
Well done.
England.
Correct.
Number three. I'm going to go for Ireland.
What? No. So it's not
Australia?
Ireland.
Jay, you go.
So it's, by the time we get to, you can keep guessing. By the time we get to number 10, I'll keep a tally of who scored the most. So you've both got one at the minute. JB, you're on number three.
It's Australia.
Correct. Number four.
Then Ireland, surely. What?
In that case, it will be South Africa.
Correct.
Yes.
Number five.
Go for Ireland.
Yeah, I'm going to have to now. I'm going to have to stick with it. Ireland.
Correct. Correct.
Argentina.
Correct, JB.
Very,
4-2.
Very good.
Very astute.
Yeah.
Who's number seven?
Ireland.
Wales.
Is correct.
Okay.
Number eight.
Number eight is going to be... France?
Correct, JB. Number nine.
Scotland.
Is correct.
Yeah, and so then, Phil.
Either to make it a win...
Have I said Wales yet? Yeah, I said Wales. It's going to be Fiji.
Have we lost Tim?
I think we've lost Tim. But I can hear him in mine. He says Fiji.
So there are you hearing me?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. There we go, Tim.
Yeah. It was Fiji.
Hey! Beardmore wins again.
6-4.
Very good.
I was just doing my Dermot O'Leary X Factor pause, and that's all that was. And interestingly, Georgia are 11.
Ah, that is interesting.
So, but I still think we've got a little bit of time, just enough time through these autumn internationals for Wales, and in the next year or two, for Wales to get down to number 9 again and create a pool of death.
Ooh,
for
maybe.
The 2019 World Cup.
That'd be nice. Oh, I've got a question for you. Do you think the All Blacks cleaned up their changing room after this loss?
Definitely.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
First time in 19 games.
I think they went and cleaned up Ireland's dressing room.
Yeah, you see when they're walking off, they were not happy in the slightest. I thought that is a team that is not picking up tape today. Picking up tape is very easy to do when you're winning. It's very difficult when you're losing.
But I thought that the fans and the players, they showed a lot of class in the way that they took defeat. They're not used to it. And they've been brilliant from everything I've read, seen.
What was their option? There is no option. I mean, everyone else is courteous in defeat. So should they be?
Yes. Yeah, there's been no whinging about refs or anything like that. It's been, but there's no complaints really, is there?
No, absolutely not. They were beaten fair and square, and the blueprint of how to beat Ireland, the All Blacks, is out there. You've got to outscore them.
Yes, yeah.
And that was it. Quick question. Which of the Lions, starting 15, is not from that Ireland team that started against the All Blacks?
Couple of second rows, potentially.
13, possibly.
Yeah.
13, in fact, probably. 13, a winger or two.
A hooker.
Sean,
a tight head prop.
I'm not a big fan of Best at all, but I thought he was outstanding.
He was awesome.
He was brilliant. He was
outstanding.
He was absolutely brilliant. Tight head prop, potentially.
Maybe.
Yeah. Jack McGrath was immense.
And 15...
No, I thought
Carney had a good game.
Great game.
But I would have Hogg as my first choice.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see if that same 15 could beat the All Blacks playing Warren Ball. And only one way to find out.
Yeah.
Well, with that segue, I mean, I know Warren wasn't at the helm for Wales here, but shall we?
Well, it's not really. Well, there's lots to say, and also simultaneously, not very much to say about Wales. There's only 55,000 people there. The Welsh public didn't really take it seriously.
Was there really that many?
Yeah, actually
it looked like a lot less.
Yeah. It had the atmosphere of a municipal swimming pool.
Yeah, that second half as well, when Wales are getting hammered, no one seems to care. Everyone's just chatting among themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, they were missing three forwards, but that doesn't really matter. It doesn't even factor into it, quite frankly.
Let's just go on to the forwards, because they were missing very experienced forwards.
Yeah, they were, but do you know what the problem is, Phil?
Well,
the problem. Sorry, go on. I'm interrupting.
The three forwards they were missing, so Alan Wynne-Jones, Faletau and Warburton, you actually had, they're probably the three forwards who you've got the best second choice replacements for.
Yeah.
Because I thought Moriarty was the best Welshman on the pitch.
Yeah.
Replacing Faletau. Tipperick is a very good player, and then Charteris and Davis are very good experienced locks, so that shouldn't have made the difference that there was between the teams.
There was so much of a gulf that you couldn't really say Wales need to tighten up here and here. Everything needs just to be just thrown away and start again.
I don't want to take Phil's spot as a stat man, so I'll give Phil the chance to say this, because I bet you've got the meters made in front of you, Phil.
I have got the meters made in front of me.
Go on then, because this is an amazing stat.
Well, what I've got in front of me is the ESPN version, which sometimes differs from elsewhere, but it was Wales 273, Australia 656.
Oh, I've got Wales meters made 96, Australia meters made 543.
Ah, right.
Well, so anyway, there's obviously some differences there. But
one thing
doesn't matter. It's a massive 3-1 ratio or more.
And so here is one of the most incredible. I thought the Welsh back line, until Amos came on and he actually offered some spark, I thought they were awful. The Australian back line was very good, particularly Hodge and Kurindrani, and Haylett Petty and Folau. But meters made for the centre pairing. So Kurindrani and Hodge, I can tell you they made 131 meters between them. 135 meters between them. Mm-hmm. Roberts and Scott Williams, how do you think they did compared to 135?
Well, we need to know how many carries Jamie Roberts had.
give me a figure in total.
I reckon
the
Jamie Roberts got 50 meters. No, Jamie Roberts got 40 meters, and maybe supplement that with another 40, 90 meters between them.
Any advance on that, Tim?
I would say less from what I saw. I wasn't watching intently, I have to say.
No, no. If Wales only got... Let me just recalibrate that.
So they got 300 metres in total, Wales.
I reckon 60 of them will be the centres.
60. It's lower than 90. It's lower than 60.
Oh, my word.
I can tell you those two centres, who both played 80 minutes, mm-hmm. made a combined total of 7 metres between them.
Oh, my word.
So
wow.
So Scott Williams carried 6 times for 5 metres, and Jamie Roberts carried 3 times for 2 metres.
He
a
has.
Net game of 2 metres.
Oh, wow. I was watching the bits I saw, because I was preparing for the Anglo-Welsh Cup match, as you mentioned, on Saturday at the Stoop. So I didn't watch it intently. But Jamie Roberts just had this outstanding ability to run away from space and into contact.
Well, that's what he's done his whole career.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't run at space. He's never run at space.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I think Jamie Roberts now, he's just about... In fact, he's 30 this week. Happy birthday, Jamie. He's just got too much wear. You know, everyone knows what he's going to do. You can game plan against him. It's not going to... You know, he's not going to come out and surprise you with his new bag of tricks. And I just wonder if maybe after all these years of being... such a heroic member of the Welsh squad. I mean, some of his performances have been simply some of the best ever in a Welsh shirt.
Welsh and Lions shirts as well.
But I just think maybe his time's up. Maybe his effectiveness as a professional is starting to wane even.
Yep.
I don't think he's as effective as he was. He is less effective than he was. But I don't think that's because he's not as good. I think it's because rugby's moved on.
No, I think it's because he's not as good. I think
there could be an element of both of that in there. I mean, I do see the wear and tear on his body because of the game he plays.
Yeah, the game he plays. And how many test matches has he had now? How many Lions tests has he had?
Yeah, he can't be far off 100 caps now, can he?
Yeah, and he's had a couple of years in the French leagues too.
Yeah, I mean, that's notoriously good for your body.
But in that time, he'll come up against fly halves. So if he runs a hard line down the channel, they'll sit him down just as much as...
Or
any other player these days.
Or, like most teams do, they throw a Joe Worsley in his path. And that's kind of more what has happened throughout his time. So it's a tricky one. I really hope he can get back to his best, but I don't see it now.
Here's one thing, just from Wales's backline point of view, because you said about, you know, rip it up and start again. Wales's 11-15 was exactly the same as the 2012 Grand Slam. They haven't moved on at all in those positions since then. And 5 of the team that played were playing the last time they beat Australia 8 years ago. So God.
Exactly right. So one of my biggest criticisms about the Welsh squad and Welsh rugby in general is there's not enough turnover of players. So, yes, they've got a settled team. But where are the backups? Where are the new players?
Yeah. But I think what they're going to do is pick the pretty much, apart from maybe one or two exceptions, they'll pick the same team again and try and do the same thing next week.
Who knows? I mean, yeah. Howley's going to be a caretaker. This is going to be a bad year for Welsh rugby because Gatland being away. I mean, Howley coaching Gatland's system without Gatland holding his hand doesn't sound like a good idea to me. So it's going to be a bad year. We're going to have to like it and lump it, and then afterwards, well, we've got Gatland for another 2 years. Gatland will be fine. I just don't think it's going to be a good time in the Howley.
Wales.
Let's look at the post Gatland. Who's the question? Is it Die Young? Live Fast Die Young after Gatland?
No, I don't think it is because of the horrible snake pit of Welsh rugby. I don't think a Welshman will be equipped to take on the Welsh national job. I think it'll be the best New Zealander that they can find.
Right. Which could be someone like Blackadder who's just come across.
Absolutely,
or
right, yeah.
Wayne Smith. Or
it will not be a Welshman because it's just... Yeah, they just can't handle it.
The regional politics.
Oh, they're mental. Absolutely mental.
In terms of the style of play, the one thing I found really odd, was Australia could go from 122 to the other with like 5 or 6 phases, but Wales just playing that same kind of repetitive... phase play, 15 phases or more, and they'd go from the halfway line to the 10 metre line. It's just not 2016 rugby. That's
you keep
playing the phases is one thing, but you play the phases to create the space, but it seems like Wales play the phases to play more phases.
Yeah, they couldn't identify and then exploit the space even when it happened, even when they got good midfield turnover ball around the halfway line. it's almost like they didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, they're not physical enough to play the game plan that they want them to play. There's all sorts going on in Wales. As much as I love Gatland, and I truly do love Gatland, I think he's been a fantastic coach. 8 years in any one job is a long, long time. And yeah.
And
maybe a change is as good as a break.
With a lot of the
same
backroom
staff. It's interesting, isn't it? Look at
the way
people like stock value is kind of rises and falls. But if you stick around too long, look at Jim Mallander now. He's not quite the catch he was a few years ago, is he?
No, not at all. Good point. And like Graham Rowntree with England, there for a number of years, was talked about as one of the best scrummaging coaches in the world. Then his last few games that he was coaching England, the scrum with excellent personnel completely disintegrated.
Yeah, I like it. I liken it to Michelin star chefs. Do you know the way? Like you can't have hotels and restaurants lose their Michelin stars all the time because if you're always doing the same thing continuously, it's no longer
special.
Up to
scratch. Yeah.
And like I think Wales have done exactly the same thing. They've just kept the same individuals in the same places for too long. And maybe, you know, if only Dave Rennie hadn't signed for Glasgow,
JB,
I think that'd be the next guy.
JB, I completely agree with you. But can I just point out, this is what Phil and I have pretty much been saying for about 2 years.
Yeah, you were 2 years too early. Being too early is the same as being wrong, mate.
Okay.
Very good point.
There were some positives.
Go on.
Moriarty being one, as Phil already mentioned.
100%.
The BBC graphics team being another. Did you see John Inverdale holding up a printed out possession stat?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to
quite embarrassing.
Thanks to the unique way it's funded.
Yeah, honestly. And also, they were messing about with green screen and having Jeremy Guscott appear on the pitch like a weatherman. It was brilliant.
Savage cuts.
And I've got to say, also the other positive was fair play to all the Aussie fans who made the effort to travel from Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah, good on them.
So Wales, yeah. Wales. I was reading before, Wales haven't won their first autumn international since 2002. So they have form of starting very slowly in this, and the last one that they won in 2002 was against Romania. Their defeats include losing to Argentina and Samoa and a draw against Fiji in the equivalent fixture over the past few years.
But then Wales haven't won an opening autumn international since 2004, so one of those records was going to tumble.
Sorry, that was Wales.
Oh, well, I thought you said Australia.
No, Wales haven't won that opening fixture.
Oh, right. I thought you said Australia because I thought Wales was 2004. But
I Wales was 2002. But yeah, a long time anyway. 10, 12 years without, or 12, 14 years without winning.
Mm. But you said JB just mentioned that he loves Warren Gatland. Might be a good opportunity to just mention our encounter with Gats this week.
Oh yeah, you guys went down there, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. It was really interesting, actually. So we got to interview both Gatland and Will Greenwood, which was nice.
Yeah. What were the highlights?
Oh, you're meant to be here, Tim, with my shirt. Damn it!
I told you I might not be down. We'll have to wear it. And, well, as we're not Facebook Live-ing this video, it's probably a good thing.
Yes.
So next week we will Facebook Live all wearing our brand new British and Irish Lions jerseys that I have in a little Canterbury presentation box. I'll tweet a picture of them. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool afternoon, actually.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, it was quite hard to get close to Gatland because everyone wants to get close to Gatland. You know, just, you know, have a chat. All of the Canterbury bigwigs were there, which is pretty cool. And I got a good 10-minute chat with the COO of the Lions. And that was really interesting.
Right, okay.
It wasn't recorded, it was off the record and all the rest of it. But it was a really, really interesting chat about how the Lions are kind of... Because there's a lot of criticism about them, isn't there? About the makeup of the tour, 10 games...
Not enough preparation time beforehand. Yeah. You go straight from the Pro 12 and Premiership.
Some players
final.
Won't even be in the squad for the first week or two.
Yeah. And the argument is, and I think I might even buy it. I'm not sure if I completely buy it, but I might buy it. It's a proper tour. It's a proper old school amateur tour. It's not a performance tour. It's a tour.
That's the excuse they have because they can only justify because they've got this such a tight narrow window to fit around the Northern Hemisphere season and the Southern Hemisphere season.
Yeah, it's always been that way. And I kind of think, yeah, yeah, okay,
it has always been that way.
If you're going to take all the best players from the home four nations, maybe there should be a handicap. Maybe it should be hard.
When was the last time we won in New Zealand?
I think going to New Zealand is hard enough for any team.
Was it the 70s that we last had a successful tour to the New Zealand? To
I don't know, mate.
New Zealand?
I don't know, but I'm convinced, right, that after Saturday's game with Ireland, there should be a Lions tour in the United States, touring all the way down through to Argentina. I'm pretty sure we'd all go on that.
Oh, my word, yeah.
There should be a World Cup in America as well.
Again, just an update on the American thing. Again, it's a pretty much... Well, no, it is a done deal. It just hasn't been announced. The March Avicii Premiership game that's going to be happening in New York again.
Amazing. If you're trying to plan a live show or book tickets or you want fans to book tickets, it's absolutely astonishingly amazing organisation.
So please do bear with us. Keep the first weekend in March free and just be ready to come join us for an almighty party in the Big Apple.
Yeah, keep the first weekend of March free. Save all of your money just in case they decide to announce it on a whim.
Yeah.
So it's really irritated me, this. As a professional organisation and as a, it's one of the top sports leagues in the world. Get your house in order. Tell us when the damn fixtures are as soon as you know.
Let the boys play.
Yeah, how can we play if we don't know where we're playing? It's either going to be A, Kingston Park, or B, New York.
It will be in one of those.
Yeah, and
places.
I'm only going to... No. I'm only going to one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's what I meant.
So, yeah, great, great work. Were we talking about something serious then? Oh, yeah, the Lions shirt is exceptional.
Yes, I had a... Well, so I've not
no,
got
I,
my
I
version,
I,
but I've
I
seen
don't
one.
Want to... I've got them here, so... And you'll have seen the pictures by now. You're going to describe it. I've put it on, JB, and I think it is exceptional and it is lovely. I will say that the elasticated collar bit in between the collar, it's a little bit like those old cotton drill tops from back in the day. I'm not a massive fan of that particular part.
Uh-oh. I like the collar.
It's
a kind of...
Well, okay, I don't like collars.
No, I love there being a collar on it.
Like collars on any sports shirts because I don't think I'm ever going to wear a tie with that shirt. But actually, it does look good. It looks classic. I was shocked to see it was red. I didn't see that coming. But yeah, it's a good shirt. It's a tidy shirt.
Lovely stash. Hashtag stash watch.
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
I also want to just say spare a thought for Italy, shall we? Because they're going to get the all black lash.
Yeah.
I tweeted last night, I bet Italy really fancy their chances after that one.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
That's not going to be fun for them.
And more's the point, on the 19th, I just think Ireland are going to get...
Oh,
whacked.
I don't. I think the Aviva's going to be rocking.
Oh, well... That was a big thing, actually, in Soldier Field. It was almost entirely Irish support there, wasn't it? It was incredible. I thought there would be a lot, but I didn't think it would be to that extent.
I mean, they do dye the river or the lake or whatever there is there green.
The river coming off.
Yeah, so it is actually quite a big Irish town. They said the same, didn't they, about the... Remember the Football World Cup is 1990, whatever it was, one or something in the USA.
94 World Cup. Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, because Republic of Ireland played Italy. And they thought because it's in New York, it'd be loads of Italians. And they went there, it was loads of Irish.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that much. But the Aviva will be packed. It'll be rocking. Don't be so quick to say Ireland will capitulate because I don't think that they will.
I don't think they'll capitulate and I don't think they'll get spanked. I just think I think revenge will be wreaked in 2 weeks' time.
Ooh, I can't. Well, let's find out. Looking forward to it.
Yes. I'm excited for that already.
Shall we do some Anglo-Welsh Cup chat?
Well, the South Africa v Barbars, let's just mention that briefly, the game at Wembley.
Yeah, no, I'm going to tell you, I didn't watch this. It had Barbars on it, and I thought, not that keen. And it looks like I was wrong.
Yeah, no, it was a really good game, and the Barbars played amazingly. Just have a look at some of the highlights for Nairavolo's offloads. They were just ridiculous.
Nairavolo and Monaghan. Luke Monaghan, yeah. another Australian yes. winger who scored a couple of tries, who looked yeah. very good.
He did. And Johan Hansi van Rensburg.
Rohan Jansi von Rensburg.
Correct, JB.
That's the one you want. That is, that boy is some player.
Yeah, he came in for Jesse Creel,
yeah,
who's unfortunately injured.
I said this at the start of the season. If I was Bath, I would have signed him immediately.
Yeah, he's exactly the kind of player that Bath want.
Oh.
But also, another player who showed up well, Milani Nanai, had a hand in every single Barbarians try. And it's like that it just demonstrated how freakish the strength in depth is for New Zealand, because he'd be a top international player for most other countries, if not every other country.
Sorry, who is he?
Nanai.
Nanai plays for the Blues, fullback plays for the Blues.
Well, there you go.
He was good.
Well, hang on, talk about freakish strength and depth. You know, Charles Peartow doesn't play for the All Blacks.
He didn't have his finest game on Friday night, unfortunately.
Ooh.
Yeah, let's talk about the next half hour dedicated to Phil's weekend in Edinburgh, watching a poor Edinburgh side beat his beloved Pride Ulsterman.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions about this. First of all, what is the situation with Paddy Jackson? Why did he not play?
Well, he was with the Ireland squad,
yeah,
but didn't travel to Chicago because there are some police investigations for an alleged assault, sexual assault, that he and Stuart Alding are helping them with.
What, are they witnesses?
I don't know. I don't know any more than that, and I wouldn't like to say any more than that.
Ooh, keep an eye on that one. That sounds a little bit grisly. So, so they obviously weren't involved.
No.
Who are the centre pairing then? Because obviously they've got a million centres. Who do they go with?
Luke Marshall.
Know him.
And Sam Windsor.
Never heard of him.
He's a young centre winger. I was a bit surprised to see him, to be honest. Particularly as they had Jacob Stockdale on the bench, who's again outside back centre. Big, big, strong ball carrier who came on and actually looked very good when he came on. They had Heron, Brett Heron, who we've discussed before.
Oh, stop! remember last week we were talking about
the weakest
names.
Yeah,
do you want to know the weakest name?
Aroni.
Aroni, thanks to our friend
Rose
on Twitter. Who do you know this, Tim?
No, go on.
Okay, Aroni. Okay, is a plural, is basically the Italian plural for heron. So Aroni or the herons?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah, a heron couldn't even do any damage to a zebra.
No, not really. In fact, I think some types of heron, in the same family genus, actually sit on zebras' backs and pick ticks off them for them.
The most subservient animal ever.
So there you go, herons. Anyway, how was your anything to report?
It was dreadful from Ulster. Absolutely awful. It was, with that said, Edinburgh did look impressive. And I can't quite work out how much of it was Edinburgh genuinely played very, very well, and how much of it was Ulster just were awful.
Or Edinburgh enjoying a post-Alan Solomon's boom?
I wouldn't call it a boom, because the previous week they lost to Zebre.
But the week before that, they beat Harlequins.
They did, yes. So it's maybe a post Solomon's roller coaster.
Yeah, maybe.
They did play very well. The defence was excellent. They had a lot of territory in possession. They kicked intelligent. Jason Tovey kicked intelligently, and they took their opportunities in fine style.
Now, was it a standing room only, or did you manage to get some seats?
We just about managed to sneak in a 70,000 seat stadium, and there was a reported 5,000 people in there.
Wow!
Oh my word.
Do the math, nearly 70,000 free seats.
That's ridiculous. A bit like the Millennium Stadium.
The atmosphere was actually okay. There was, talking with Chris and Alistair Lees, who does an Edinburgh Rugby podcast, who we met up there.
Oh, right, okay.
They say that there were more Ulster fans than there are normal travelling support, so it was actually a bit fuller and the atmosphere was a bit better than usual.
Oh no.
But Edinburgh did look good. And they're 15, Blair Kinghorn, who's a rangy runner.
He's moving very good, isn't he?
Yeah, he's about 6'5".
I mentioned him in the under-20s World Cup. He was very good for Scotland there.
All right, Tim. It's not all about you.
He looked very good. His reading of the game, more importantly, because there's a few times when a kick was put through and you thought, for all the world, Ulster were going to dot this down and score, and he read it perfectly. And their younger, Magnus Brad... The two good names, Magnus Bradbury and Blair Kinghorn.
Blair Kinghorn's exceptional, isn't it?
Two young...
amazing name for a Scottish player as well. Yeah. Blair Kinghorn.
Brilliant. Oh, I thought more like a gay porn star.
Could have been on your quiz.
Oh my God, he could have been in our Porn 15. We might have to revise our Porn 15.
Blair Kinghorn.
So they were all very good. Ulster, pretty bad. And Brett Herron, who played at 10, did not have a great game at all. In fact, it was only the last 10 minutes when they put Pienaar to 10 and brought Paul Marshall on at 9 that Ulster actually got some control in the game.
Okay, so do we need to know anything else about the game, or can we stop talking about Ulster?
Let's stop talking about that, because we've put Phil through the grinder on that one. But before we talk about any other rugby,
before we do anything, I want to know about your game, Leicester Bath, please, Tim.
Go for it, Tim.
I think there's bigger stuff to talk about before we get into any Anglo-Welsh.
But you were there,
cup stuff.
Yeah, okay. You must have seen something of interest, or someone of interest, or something.
It was one of the best games I've seen all season.
Really?
In terms of entertainment, yeah, it was fantastic. And my first experience of Todd Blackadder, and I've just got to...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Say he might be my new favorite DOR in terms of just like what an unbelievably nice man. I can't express what a gent he is. He's so nice.
He's a bit of a silver fox as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think there's a few man crushes going on in the BT Sport team with Todd Blackadder.
With Blackadder.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who was I talking to about Todd Blackadder? I can't remember now. I'm sure I've had someone on the Rugby Dungeon who's played for him. And apparently, he will just work with his players regardless.
Bentley, the Exeter lock.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he was just saying that... if you need extra practice and, you know, you ask him, he will be out there until God knows what time, making sure that you're spot on with your kickoffs or your kickoff receipts or whatever it is that you need.
I got really good vibes from the guy as just a bloke. Well, I mean, you get that with rugby a lot. And
yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, in fact, there isn't a DOR I don't think is a good bloke, but it's only my first experience, so that's one thing. The other thing is it's a Lions year, so obviously Tom Croft made his comeback.
Yeah. Successful comeback.
You look good
off the bench.
He got his head in a few times. There was some
60 meter try somewhere.
Not this time.
Building, mate.
It wasn't to be for Bath. They had a lot of young guys out there. Leicester are quite a good side. Harry Thacker is I love that guy. What a ball of muscle.
Yeah, he's not really been playing much this season, has he? He's
not
been near the first team squad after his breakthrough year last year.
Oh, he's so good.
His brother was playing as well, wasn't he? Is it Charlie Thacker?
Charlie, yeah. Came on off the bench.
Yeah. And Freddie Burns was playing.
Pulling the strings, he did he, was very influential. So there was that. Again, and that was one of the things, the observations from the Anglo Welsh Cup over the weekend, because I worked at the Quinns game as well, Quinns Exeter.
Were you doing your normal role, Tim?
Sorry?
Were you doing your normal role?
What do you mean?
As in pitch side and after match stuff.
Yeah, I was doing all that, but I also got to do, I also did some bits in the dress, which had never been done before. It was a bit of an experiment for the Anglo Welsh Cup, but did some bits in the dressing room.
How was that?
With having a look around. It was, yeah, it was good. It was good. So I had Guy Mercer from Bath showed me around the Bath dressing room, and then Exeter, you know, they're quite an old school kind of club, very professional in their approach, but got that real old school feel as a club.
Yeah.
Well, when you go in their dressing room, Phil Dolman, who got injured, first game back and he got injured.
Ooh. Oh, did he?
There's a few injuries out of that Quinns Exeter game. We'll have to check the status of a lot of players, but there's quite a lot of players when it got injured, unfortunately. But Phil Dolman, unfortunately, with one of them, and it looked quite bad as well. He showed me round, but that Exeter have loads of jelly babies in big tubs on their table, like when we played at Broughton Park, JB.
Nice, yeah. We had basically a miniature Woolworths, didn't we, set up in the showers. The most ridiculous thing I've ever heard for pre-match snacks. There was a guy who's played with called Joe Noon, and he didn't eat sweets or something like that. I can't remember. So he requested that our kit manager, he's a reasonable kit manager. It should never be a DOR, but he is now. He started bringing breadsticks. As the pre-match
breadsticks.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? Yeah, we just want some nibbles before the game. So in Broughton Park, we had like all these sweets and stuff. And then Joe had his own packet of Tesco's Finest breadsticks.
You should have gone for some bruschetta or some olives.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Wow.
At all the levels I've played, I'd like to compare notes with Phil, but whether it was down at level six, you know, just playing a bit of social rugby with UJB, or whether it was national one or whatever, it was always jelly babies, Jaffa cakes.
Yeah.
Is that the same for you, Phil?
Yeah, frequently.
I think Jaffa cakes have been kept in business by professional rugby players.
I think so. Well, although I didn't see any this weekend.
Have you ever heard this one? So I had an old strength and conditioning coach who used to work with Warrington Wolves too, right?
Yeah.
And he said in Warrington Wolves they were freezing their jelly babies in order to get slower release energy.
There's Clive Woodward's approach of trying to get every little 1% gain. That's just taking it a step too far, isn't it?
That is bro science.
Bro science right there. That is.
And how would you eat a rock solid frozen jelly baby? That's the other thing too.
I've heard of some ludicrous bro science. This is not in rugby, in like the gym, bodybuilding, where people would eat a hard boiled egg at the bottom of every squat.
No.
So they'd be doing a squat and they'd pop in a hard boiled egg.
For what
and
reason?
Then up to the top, then down. Protein release, mate, obviously.
Oh, that makes sense. How bizarre. So, yeah, there you go. In fact, yeah, that could be not maybe. Is that maybe our hashtag of this week? Bro science
let's
fact.
Save it for the end then. But
yeah, I like that one.
Yeah,
stash tag.
Save that for the stash tag. Save that for the stash tag. Can you hear me?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, we're in.
Oh, right, sorry. I thought I cut out then for a second.
No.
What was I going to say? There's one thing that I think is more pressing than any Anglo-Welsh or Pro 12 chat.
Okay.
And that is Andy Robinson.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Do you want to kick this off? I've got some information that might be interesting for you.
Okay, well, so the story emerged that, what was it, on Wednesday or Thursday, Andy Robinson had been suspended from his role as director of rugby after the results, disappointing premiership results this season, which is an odd thing to read. It gives the impression that he's done something wrong, as in naughty.
Well, yes, okay.
Suspension is weird in two ways. One, it gives the impression he has done something wrong, like you say. But two, it gives you the impression that under at least some circumstances, he might be able to get his job back or be reinstated, which I don't think, from my understanding, I don't think either of those are even remotely close to.
He's not.
I'm sure they could. They could do the old, go and have a week off, do the gardening, spend a bit of time with your family, and then we'll see you in a couple of weeks. It'll all be fine again. You can crack on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a justified firing. That's the first thing I'd say. It's just a straightforward firing. The suspension bit is odd, but it's justified.
Yeah.
And let me tell you why it is justified. Firstly, when they were in the championship, they lost a lot of playoff games. So he was lucky to get this far.
Quite frankly.
He brings them up to the Premiership. He sacks Sean Holley. Now, I don't know what your views are on Sean Holley. I don't really know much about Sean Holley because he coached at the Ospreys. And it's hard to get a gauge on an individual who has such a strong team as Bristol playing in the Championship. But in fairness to Sean, he did get them promoted.
Yeah.
Now, he fired Sean Holley and replaced him with two guys who have never coached before in Dwayne Peel and Jonathan Thomas. So you're getting into the best league maybe in Europe, or second best league in Europe, or if you're a Pro 12 fan, the third best league in Europe, right? With two complete novice coaches. And then the weirdest thing for me is the Bristol squad. Does anyone know how many players are in the Bristol squad?
Well, we heard north of 50, closer to 60.
62.
60, wow.
Now, if that is true, I mean, I don't know what the contract structures are like or how their pay is structured. I don't know
whether that's including the academy players as well.
Yeah, but 62 players. So, I mean, that could be a red herring, but it doesn't sound to me as if there's been much structure in there, and it just sounds like they've been wasteful with a salary cap. So all those things combined does mean to me that it's a completely justified firing.
I'm a little bit torn because on the one hand, it just feels a bit football.
No, it doesn't. He's been there for 4 years.
We've had an attacking coach going in Alex King from Northampton, a defence coach at Leicester going in Steve Hansen, and a director of rugby going 7 weeks in. The way that rugby gets done, the same with picking your squad. You get your house in order, you know what you're doing, you do it, and then afterwards you kind of deal with the consequences. I know the stakes are higher now, so things need to be changed a bit more, but it just feels, to me, I don't like it.
I do understand the point, Tim, particularly after they only gave him a new 3-year deal in August of this year.
Exactly.
In August, he was the right man for the job. Now he's not, and it does feel a bit reactionary, but with that said, I do think the results have justified it. And besides the first game when they narrowly lost to Harlequins in the Wembley or Twickenham game, he's not done much at all. And that home hammering against Sale, who don't travel well, I think, I do think it's justified. And also, like your point on the squad, Jay, you look at the squad, how many current internationals or people even pushing to be current internationals have they got in there? They've got a lot of internationals, but they're all ones who are kind of a bit over the hill.
They've got some Premiership talent there, like Will Cliff, for instance.
Cliff, he was always second choice at Sale.
But if you talk to anyone at Sale, they all rate him very highly.
And they're all going to say that, though. They can't say anything else.
But the ultimate, because it's off the record. And the other thing as well is if you want the ultimate compliment, it's the guy who used to be ahead of him, Dwayne Peel, saying that you need to sign that guy. And it's not like the short on cash; they can sign pretty much whoever they want.
Because Peel didn't want any more pressure. He knew he could keep. Keep Will Cliff second choice.
Yeah, that's a good point. Keep his job.
And they can't. And also,
he wasn't asking for Mike Phillips, was he?
Yeah.
I'm not buying that they can sign whoever they want, because what they've been reduced to signing is overpaying on guys that are on the way down.
Of course,
Jordan Crean, prime example.
Ian Evans.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely mind you. Ian Evans is only 32. I mean, you'd thought for a lot.
But he's not been playing well since the Lions 2013, really.
So there's some structural issues there which clearly need to, be addressed. And maybe if they were playing a little better. But they're not. They've never played nice rugby. So it's completely justified. However, out of the fire, into the frying pan. Who do they have now?
Tainton.
Hands up if you know anything about Mark Tainton.
Kicking coach?
We're not on Facebook Live. My hand is not up. I don't know very much at all.
My hand is not up. I've done some investigations. Tim?
He's a kicking coach.
Is he? I mean, we don't really know.
I don't know.
Okay, so the reason I know about Mark Tainton, the same reason Phil knows about Mark Tainton, is he's on LinkedIn. So do you want to read his CV?
Okay. If I just load this up, here we go. Why is it kicked me out?
Well, I'll start. So he's at Bristol now.
Here we go.
Oh.
So, Bristol Rugby Club player, 13 years from 83 to 97. Then kicking coach for the RFU. So coach national teams from schools to senior teams. He was then head coach for a year, just over a year, at Richmond Rugby when Richmond collapsed. He went on to coach Oxford University for a few years, then skills coach at Munster before two consultant appointments in rugby league at Warrington and Wigan. He was then a consultant at Saracens 2007-2008 and then a sports brand consultant at Puma. Followed by an assistant coach at the Irish Rugby Football Union, and then an independent sports consultant where he did some work with Wasps.
Yeah. Now, my understanding is, in his last role, his job was to teach Wasps kickoffs, and that was it. I mean, that basically is it. There's two things that I take from this. He might be a very experienced individual within rugby.
Yeah, wide range of experience.
I mean, it's not an impressive top flight CV, but it's certainly an impressive CV in terms of the range of stuff that he's done.
Yeah.
Number two, I need to get into rugby consultancy.
Yeah.
Big time. You know, there's like no pressure on firings. You don't need to win any games. Just show up and you'd be a consultant. But is this really the guy who is qualified to do a review of a Premiership rugby club? And then appoint the next DOR or be the next DOR?
That'd
be
he's not going to be appointing the next DOR.
Well, what's his job then if he's in charge of the review?
He's just a caretaker and he's obviously a club man. Now, I think there's a little element of this which it feels a little bit like, was it, I don't know who the guy was at the RFU, was it Ian Ritchie?
Yeah, Ian Ritchie.
He was the guy that was responsible for some dreadful appointments, and it's easy to say with hindsight, but Martin Johnson, Andy Robinson and Stuart Lancaster.
Wait there. Ian Ritchie appointed Andy Robinson. Are you sure about that?
I'm not sure the timing's quite right.
I think Ian Ritchie's first appointment was Lancaster.
He definitely appointed Lancaster. Anyway.
Okay. So I'm not wanting to put it all on Ian Ritchie. Whoever was in charge of the RFU, it was the RFU and their management. They appointed Andy Robinson, Martin Johnson, Stuart Lancaster, people without the sort of experience that we're now seeing with Eddie Jones. They repeatedly did it and they weren't the ones who ever carried the can. And that, in business, that doesn't happen. If a company repeatedly goes through cycle after cycle of poor performance and it's not the MD that gets axed, it's the guy who keeps putting poor MDs in place.
The chairman.
Who eventually carries the can.
Which would be the chairman. Yeah.
Yes.
You can't keep hiring rubbish managing directors and then expect yourself to get removed eventually.
I guess the big difference is in business you'd probably go out of business, whereas in the RFU that doesn't seem to happen and never will do.
And in business,
my point being, it's yes, I agree Andy Robinson is not the man, but then I don't think any of us have ever been a big fan, but they, as Phil just said, they gave him a new contract three months ago.
Yeah.
Madness. I agree with you.
That is madness.
That's insanity.
Like the RFU gave Lancaster a 6-year deal.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
One of the most incredible...
Forget podcasting. I'm going straight into rugby consultancy. I've had enough of this.
Any idea who the ultimate coach will be?
Everyone's saying Heinicke-Meyer, aren't they?
Heinicke-Meyer's up there.
Robbie Deans has been spoke about.
Yeah, we had Martin Hogg. An interesting one is they have got a very good coach in there at the moment, Mark Bakewell. Everyone who knows about Mark Bakewell will tell you he's a very good coach, to the point that they won't probably appoint a coach with a forwards background if they can keep Mark Bakewell in.
Right, okay.
That seems to be one of the few glimmers of hope.
So Jonathan Thomas, then, what's his coaching role?
He's defence coach.
Ah, right, okay.
And then I don't know what Dwayne Peel's role is.
Backs and skills?
Maybe. But I think they need...
Joke-telling?
The joke-telling, maybe. But they need another guy to come in, I think, maybe with backs experience rather than anything else. Or actually, do you know what? No, they don't. What they need is they need an overall DOR who doesn't get involved in coaching and can assemble a coaching team and work the salary cap to the best of his advantage.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they are past that now because you organise your salary cap in the off-season.
Yeah. So. The salary cap allocation is done and has not been done particularly well.
Yeah. There's nothing more you can do. So Steve Diamond is the only guy that could dig him out of this hole.
Could possibly, or yourself.
I'd appoint Steve Diamond. So in a roundabout way, it's going to be the same appointments. But on a serious note, that's what they need. They need someone to get some fight in them. Because that Sale game, they had no fight in them whatsoever.
It'll be interesting to see, because you do often, with a new appointment of coaching in all sports, or a new director of rugby, manager, you often get a bit of a bounce, a bit of a honeymoon period when he comes in, and the players have got a bit of competition because their place is suddenly under threat. They're all vying to prove that they're the ones going to be performing and taking it forward. So
that is the positive, that there's 15 games. There's 15 games.
Yeah, there's plenty of time. So in that regard, acting early is good.
Yeah, and also, I mean, they've got a lot of dead wood to cut, so the chances of you getting fired at Bristol are pretty high. On account they've got, enough players for four teams?
Yes.
So a lot of players, I imagine, going to get fired pretty quickly.
Yeah. You'd like that job, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Off you go. Martin Haag.
Yes.
I've heard... Now, did we talk about this last podcast?
No.
No, I don't think so.
My understanding is Martin Haag has been fired from the England under-20s by Dean Ryan.
Right, so Dean Ryan in his kind of overarching developmental role has let Haag go.
Yes, correct.
After Haag has just
won. Haag, the coach who delivered the World Championships.
Yeah, that's won the under-20s World Cup.
Basically exactly what I'm saying. Dean Ryan doesn't like some of the players, is what I'm led to believe. And because of that, he's let Haag go, albeit letting Haag write his own quote-unquote resignation statement. So there you go. That's another one to keep a close eye on, because obviously Haag clearly is a very good... Well, he's certainly the best coach in the world at that level.
Or has access to the best players in the world at that level.
Yep.
Potentially.
Yep.
He did, and just like Glenn Delaney before him, he did a very, very good job on limited resources at Nottingham.
Yeah, that's one, isn't it? Did your brother play for him at Nottingham?
Yeah, so, yeah, but just for a bit before he went to Irish.
Yeah, so he's very, very highly thought of at Nottingham or with any of the players that have played there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, watch that one. I think that's going to be quite interesting. Another one to watch as well is Wasps' financial situation.
Yeah.
Yes!
So, what do we...
Interesting story that emerged this week. So, what are the headlines? Well, we have got... I mean, I'm not going to try and explain this. I'm not an independent financial advisor, JB. You are.
Well,
what's going on?
Okay, well, that doesn't put me in any better position than any of you guys, because I tell you what pension to put your money in. But, only from reading, like, press reports, it would seem that Wasps are losing money hand over fist every year. So, I think they've got an operating loss this year of about 2 million. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, operating losses, increased from 2.4 million to 3.8 million this year.
Yeah. Obviously, that's quite a lot of money to lose, but it doesn't seem to be quite so straightforward. Wasps have got a lot of money at their disposal because they raised a lot of money through a retail bond. So they managed to raise in the region of £36 million. So some of that money, which you see as the operating loss, may well be some of the interest that they're paying in the region of £2 million worth of interest every year.
But that 36 million,
yeah,
isn't liquid assets because it's the stadium.
No.
Yeah.
No. 36 million is an actual. They actually sold bonds and they got 36 million in cash.
No, because they're cash balances.
No. Cash is they've got 300,000 in cash. And
yeah,
that's it.
300,000 in cash. So that's on the 36 million. It includes the 48 million valuation of the Ricoh Arena, which the bonds were used to buy.
Wait. Ah, I thought they bought the Ricoh Arena for 5 million.
Well, the value is the 48 million.
Yeah, but you wouldn't include the value of debt, would you? You wouldn't say, if I have borrowed £6 million, my value is £6 million.
That's can I just say that's what the European Union did with Greece. They little history and EU lesson, but when Greece spent billion, well, might have hundreds of millions of pounds on the Olympics, the Germany basically fudged the books by saying that's all an asset. That money is all an asset, so that should be in the profit column, not the losses column.
Well, drawing the comparison back to WASPs and corporate bonds, WASPs have borrowed a lot of money. So they've got 36 million, which they need to pay back in 2020.
Yeah, so yeah, they have that as a debt, definitely. But their cash balances, so this was one of the most worrying things that
yes, I looked at. I agree.
Statement was cash balances of just 300k, and it's that liquidity that will be a problem, because we know previously from the previous owners that Haskell and other players were not getting paid at times, and only having £300,000 actually liquid is an issue, even if you've got this massive asset, because you can't sell the asset.
No, they can't.
Because that is their revenue. That's their prime source of revenue.
There are a few more things you need to consider. They've not done a rename of the stadium. They've not done any new sponsorship deals. Their gates are up.
Yeah, so this is what I was reading into it. The headlines look very negative, but there is a lot of uncertainty. So they will have had a lot of expense in the last year in changing over the stadium. And just the financial side, the legal side, but there will have been works going on there.
But like, if Willie LaRue suddenly says, "I want my I want half my salary up front,"
well, he'd be renegotiating his deal. So he'd say, "Well, in that case, we're going to change it from 750k to 300k." You just still want half it up front,
exactly. So I don't think it's all. It sounds to me disappointing, but not worrying.
Yeah, from what I've seen, there's not enough information in that statement to infer any long term conclusions from it.
The headlines, to watch.
Headlines are negative. As long as they can get over that liquidity problem, they should be okay based on what we know.
Yeah, there's
the one thing I thought was interesting is they said there's a covenant in the deal when they took over the Rico and formed this new business. There was a covenant in there saying we will never have debts that exceed the value of our business. They came to the value of their business by the directors estimating what they think the value of the business is. That's how that works. So basically, the directors say, "Oh, we've got 36 million in debt. The business is worth we think 39 million. So we're
37.
Fine."
By the way, a staggeringly good deal to buy the Rico. Staggeringly, I mean, if the figure's right, about 5 million quid. That's pretty good.
If that figure's right, because, well, it's now valued at 48 million a couple of years later, so I...
And they are the sole owners.
Valued by them.
Well, but that's surely...
That's an independent valuation.
Yeah, should have to be an independent... You can't, on that asset.
You can't get a group of directors putting their fingers in the air and going, "This feels like 50 million.
Hey, listen, I'm thinking that if anyone from Radio 4 is listening right now, money programme, new hosts, what do you reckon?
I don't think so, mate. I never, ever on a podcast talk about money... Or anything over rugby ever.
Yes.
Yeah, the other week we were talking about Apprentice. This week we're talking about high boardroom...
My boss said to me...
High-profile boardroom financial dealings.
My boss said to me, "I'm not entirely sure if you're a part-time podcaster and full-time financial advisor, or actually I'm the part-time job and your other interest is... Sorry, and your full-time job is podcasting." So
well, the truth is his job pays... For the other job.
This can't get out.
That's all right.
This can't get out.
All right. I've got a game of rugby social ready.
Yes, please. Ellis Genge watch. Yep, hit me with it.
I've not had time to look at his Twitter account this week.
Well, what was Ellis Genge impersonating this week? I've been looking at the Twitter accounts of rugby players. They love to tweet and whatnot. So I've got three questions. Just a quick one. What was Genji impersonating this week? Was it a newsreader, a dinosaur, or a Formula One car?
I'm going to say a dinosaur.
Oh, I was going to say a dinosaur. Formula One car.
It is a dinosaur, Phil's right. Because I'm not here, I can't play. I've seen the video, but I haven't seen if there's any audio with the video. But go on your phone with you at Genji while I'm doing this. And there's a little video of him and some other rugby players doing little dinosaur T-Rex impressions. I don't know if there's any sound that goes with it.
That's
but I'll ask another question while you're doing that.
Okay,
I'll try and find it.
So next question. Harry Thacker, the little ball of muscle that he is. What is it? Muscular little dump truck?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what Nick Mullins called him?
Stocky little dump truck.
Harry Thacker is a sucker for what? Is it a pudding?
No.
Is it a pair of slippers?
Maybe.
Is it a rom-com?
I'm going to go rom-com.
Slippers.
You're both wrong. It's a pudding.
No.
He's so ripped. I just wouldn't have thought he'd be all over the...
Yeah. Oh, you need to refuel after a heavy gym session. Plus, he's trying to bulk up to about... Well, he was about 13 stone at one point last
double
season.
Double his body weight. That'd be good.
Oh, hold on. Need to can you hear 20. Genji?
I can't find the thing. I'm just been on Genji then. Was it his Twitter account or was it some other one?
No, it's his Twitter account.
Here we go. Dinosaurs 2, he's retweeted.
Yeah, no, but he's in the video.
Yeah, here we go.
Wow.
Good work, Genji.
What a game.
So it's 1-0 to Phil going into the final round.
Yes.
Our favourite, probably our favourite ever, collectively, if we had to come up with a favourite ever player, then I think the one that we'd all come to consensus on would be Jacques Berger.
Miles Benjamin, but go on.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I think we could all agree, Jacques.
Yeah.
What will be the first item on Jacques Berger's Christmas list this year?
Hunting knife.
Here are the options. A hunting knife. Some pants with the face of a wolf on.
Ooh.
Or a slab of Wolfpack lager.
Hunting knife.
I'm going to go for the...
I wrote down hunting knife.
I am going to go for the pants with the face of a wolf on it.
And Phil, you take Rugby Social 2-0.
Yes!
Have a look at Jacques Berger's Twitter account, Nabasoa. And he says... Oh, I'll show you what he says. But yeah, it's... I think it might be a Saracens development, some pants.
Really? Do you not think it's a Wolfpack Lager development? That would make more sense.
No, it's pants and the crotch is like a wolf's face and the nose. Your junk sits in the nose.
Ah,
and,
nice.
And he's got hashtag Wolfpack, hashtag wet nose.
That's awful. I know Bryn's going to be sorting me out a pair of RGC pants that look very similar with RGC across the front.
Some Speedos.
Yeah, they look cool.
Yep.
Are you going to be wearing Speedos anytime soon, JB?
In the dungeon, probably.
It does get very hot down
here.
It's
very hot in here.
Facebook Live.
Yes, and sometimes you just need to air it out.
But for anyone worried about watching Facebook Live next week...
It's back on next week.
...and seeing JB in his Speedos, he will still be wearing socks.
Yes, I will.
Even in just Speedos, he still wears socks.
Yeah.
Just so you know, if you're wondering where the Facebook Live is, and I know you're all desperate to see it.
Yeah, well, Dave Reese has tweeted, and Stand Up Bath has got in touch, DM'd on Twitter. So there are a bunch of people saying, are you doing it live tonight, guys? So
no,
we apologise.
We are upgrading our internet down here. So in case you noticed, it was terrible. So once it's upgraded,
the internet had nothing to do with the fact you filmed the ceiling for a few minutes, but yeah.
Yes, that is true, yes. So there have been a few technical issues.
Yeah, we're still getting used to the technology, aren't we?
We are, slowly.
Right. Next week's fixtures?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Should we just give a quick mention for Fantasy Rugby Draft before we do that?
Why not?
Go on, then.
Which is a brilliant, brilliant online draft game that we are completely hooked on.
Too much, probably.
Yeah, to the point that JB was texting me some horrible, horrible things on Tuesday night when my waiver request for Robbie Fruin went through.
I was so angry with myself.
I've picked up Dave Ewers this week.
Ooh.
He's back.
That'll be an interesting sign-in.
Yeah, I was bragging to Bryn over a nice steak, and I, as Do you know who I was with? I was with Emma Thurston and I was with Bryn straight after the Lions launch. I was enjoying a steak and I was bragging about the secret player that I picked up who no one would have got. And because I put in two waiver requests, one for Byron McGuigan and one for Robbie Frewin. I forgot about Byron McGuigan.
Yeah.
I got Byron McGuigan, but I lost Robbie Frewin.
Yes.
So upset.
Yeah. Brilliant game. You can join now for the rest of the Aviva Premiership. You've obviously missed the first few game weeks, but you've got a couple of weeks to get your team, you and 10 friends, and get your draft pick.
Nine friends.
10 man league. And the draft, the hour-long draft, is one of the most exciting, exhilarating, nerve-wracking, stressful things you will ever do. But it is truly brilliant.
Yeah.
So get involved on there. And if you're going to put the word egg somewhere in your team name and in your league name because you'll be in the draw for some lovely Canterbury stash.
Yes, and it is a Lions year. Just remember that.
Yes, exactly. So,
remember that.
So, games this week. So there's a lot of auxiliary games. We won't go into any detail.
We said auxiliary games.
That was the most Alan Partridge way of describing a rugby match I've ever heard.
is it?
An auxiliary game?
Auxiliary game. Well, on Tuesday, the Czech Republic hosts the Barbarians. We also have Emerging Italy hosts Scotland A.
That's why they're in Prague.
What, the Barbarians?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a game that I'd watch.
What, go out to actually watch?
I'd watch that. Yeah, in Prague, the Barbarians, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
That's your fault.
Barbarians then play Fiji at the Kingspan.
Barbarians play Fiji at the Kingspan, okay, yeah.
Munster hosts the Maori All Blacks.
Fine.
Georgia play Japan.
Interesting, where?
In Tbilisi.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
I've looked into flights from Manchester to Tbilisi.
Well, this is exactly it, isn't it? This is why they can't join the Six Nations.
It's pretty tricky to get to Tbilisi. That'll be interesting because...
Is that on TV?
It might be on ESPN. Or like World Rugby or something. Because the Japan-Argentina game, Argentina were fairly comfortable. I think it was 54-20
I did Japan
winners.
Have like four debutants on.
I don't know.
On debut.
So that'll be a good test for both Georgia and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Then Italy, New Zealand, which is going to be a massacre. We've got Portugal, Belgium. We've got Spain, Tonga, Romania, United States, France, Samoa, which will be quite interesting.
I think these are all interesting games.
Germany, Uruguay.
I'd watch that. Can I watch it?
Unlikely you're going to be able to watch that. Chile play South Korea.
Wow.
In one of the most unusual fixtures.
Can you give me the locations of all these? Are they all like... Tell you what, fair play. This is a hell of an international weekend.
There's a serious number of games. That is in Chile.
Is it?
In Las Condes.
Tim's losing
if it's the same
here.
Next year, because the fixture list will be produced early, we need to go to one of these, because one of these obscure games will be really cheap and easy to get to and will be a really interesting place.
Romania, Prague, or Germany, Uruguay, we could fly to Frankfurt. That'd be dead easy.
Yeah, we could just... Yeah. Absolutely. We could let people know we're going to be there.
Portugal,
team outing, weekend knees up.
Spain versus Tonga is in Madrid. That'd be easy to get to.
Oh, Madrid's a great town.
Yeah. Anyway.
They've got some good sports bars that you just hung out in.
Yes. No, rooftop bars, obviously.
Mostly Irish bars we were hanging out in.
Yeah, not again.
Anyway, the big games. So, we've got Scotland, Australia.
Yeah.
The repeat of the World Cup last year, which I imagine is going to be an Australia win.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be good to get a positive performance from Scotland. We have
Scottish rugby, club rugby's been on a bit of a high, so
yeah,
we'll see how it translates.
Yeah, definitely. We've got Ireland, Canada in the Aviva, which will be interesting to see Ireland kind of give a few of their players a bit of a rest.
Yeah, so do you know how Ireland have structured this? They've basically got two squads. There's a Romania squad in Ireland training for this game, and the senior squad basically won't be involved.
So this would be more like the Wolfhounds.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's because the guys that played on Saturday night will be still hungover in a couple of days' time.
Did you see Jamie Heaslip's tweet?
To
Aer Lingus.
It was Aer Lingus. No, the one, who was the Irish guy that tweeted to Nianga?
I don't know.
Like, have a good one. That is like, we definitely will be having a good one with a pair of eyes.
Well, Heaslip tweeted Aer Lingus and said, I'm not sure I'm going to be making that flight tomorrow. And they tweeted back saying, no worries, Jamie. We're ready whenever you are.
Yes.
Amazing.
get out of jail free card for Jamie Heaslip.
Yeah. Then we've got Wales Argentina, if Wales play half as poorly as they did this weekend just gone, Argentina could win this.
No. I think Argentina are going to put up a huge score if Argentina play like Argentina do, because Wales could not contain any sort of attacking rugby whatsoever.
Yeah.
So this is going to be big.
That's so weird to be talking about Wales's defence being an issue. That's always been the one thing you can depend upon.
Mm. It was weird because they seem to be defending very narrow and with no line speed. So normally,
perfect.
So it's like wrong on both counts. So normally they will defend right across the pitch and then line speed driven by the wingers, because they will get up off the line first and kind of close off the outside option. They were doing neither of those things. So when Foley was taking the ball flat and using Kurundrani and Hodge and Haylett-Petty and Folau as his powerful runners, it was working wonders.
Yeah, do you know what? I said, didn't I, before, I really want to get into rugby consultancy. I don't know. I think being a defence coach is actually the better one. And I'll tell you why. Is there a defence coach in the world that doesn't preach get off the line quick, line speed, and then they dress it up, quick press.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a blitz, mate.
It's a blitz.
No, but what I do is slightly different. Yeah. This is an extra quick press.
No, what I'm going to do is it's going to be called the rapid front.
Yeah.
Rapid front.
Mine's actually maelstrom defence.
Maelstrom. I'm going to go for a, let's have a think, something.
One of the only innovative things was the Les Kiss choke tackle.
Yeah, that's basically
the past kind of the progression
and
of defence.
Don't forget, what was the team? Was it the old London Irish team that had the first of those wingers flying?
It was. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Topsy Ojo and Delon Armitage
hitting the outside centre.
Marlon Yard.
Oh no, it was way before that, mate.
Oh, it was before Marlon Yard. Yeah,
way before it. That was like Brendan Venter.
Yeah, that was Venter, wasn't it?
When Venter
was
playing.
Yeah, it was Venter, yeah.
So, being a defence coach, because every time there's a new defence coach, the commentators continue to say he's got a massive emphasis on line speed.
Line speed.
No, I won't have it. And collisions
that's
as well.
Almost, that's almost as predictable as Jiffy Jonathan Davis using one of his mantras. He always does it when he's commentating. He'll just go numbers when Wales have got an overlap. Or go Wade.
I quite enjoyed him and Brian Moore for that Wales Australia game.
Yeah,
because it's something. I don't think either of them are brilliant commentators, but I quite enjoy them because they're both quite biased and that. You've heard them for so long.
Mm.
It's like, I don't know, putting on really nice old cozy sweatshirt when it's a bit chilly outside. Quite comforting.
My rapid front defence is going to be amazing.
I'm trying to think of something that involves the word blitzkrieg. I want it to be alliterative, so like a something beginning with B, blitzkrieg. Backward blitzkrieg. I don't know.
No, not a backward blitzkrieg.
That's the opposite.
No. Backline blitzkrieg.
An inverse. We're going to work on the inverse retreat. defense coach. Sign me up as a defense coach. I'll work on your line speed and your physicality. Done.
Right.
And most of all, you'll make sure the guards don't go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly right. No,
yes.
Guards don't move. Ever.
Guards in. You'll be doing the exact opposite of what Leicester did a few weeks ago against Glasgow.
Oh, that is... Did I share this story with you?
What?
About the Leicester defence coach.
Yes, we spoke about
Scott Hansen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to make the players make good decisions at ruck, i.e. you can do whatever you want at ruck because the next guy will make a good decision and bail you out. So you didn't have to stand at guard. You could move. Because the next guy will then stand at guard.
Because the next guy mental. Will react and do something
different. Absolutely mental.
Surely that's making bad decisions. One person makes a bad decision, but it's okay because the next guy covers
attack
it.
Attack is about decisions. Defence is about rigid structure. That's it. There you go.
Okay. Final game. So, we all think Argentina win?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final game, England-South Africa.
England.
I mean, it should be England, but they haven't done it for 10 years.
Yeah.
They haven't had Eddie Jones for 10 years, though. I mean, when's the last time they whitewashed? Well, when did they last win a Grand Slam? And B, when did they last whitewash Australia?
Yeah. This autumn is going to be a big test because he hasn't got all of his first choice players.
He'll be fine. He'll be absolutely fine.
But I think he will be fine.
I hope so.
I agree.
It's interesting to see. So the South African team that played the Barbarians will be nothing like the team that plays next weekend. Not least of all because they're South Africans who play in France. Well, obviously, they're South. They're the players who play in France. Were unavailable. Mm. So like Habana and Vermeulen and a number of others were all playing for their club sides.
Yeah.
Hasn't Vermeulen been told you're not fit enough, mate? We're not considering you.
I'm not sure. Is that right?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think there was something like that. He got told you're not looking very good.
Well, that would stack up, mate, because they lost today against Lyon.
They got hammered.
And it's a damn good game. And by the way, whoever signs Carl Ferns, he carried the ball tremendously. And the other guy who's absolutely brilliant was Michalak playing at nine.
His best position.
Yeah, he looked really good.
So how do you see this going then? England, South Africa?
Well, I'll ask this question. Like, where, if you were, let's be consultants for South Africa now, where would you tell them to target for England? Where's the weak point? Where's the chink in the armour?
I think not having Cruis and Itoje and Laws is going to put some pressure on the line out. So I'd target that, and if you've got Etzebeth and Steph Dutoit and Lude de Jager and these boys, you can do that. So I think that's one place. I also think scrummaging, it was very good against Australia, but the pack has shown it can be frail in the past, so that's potentially another option.
Mm.
And then you might have an inexperienced winger out there. So similar to how Ireland did against New Zealand, you could potentially be targeting whoever's playing, well, both wingers, because you won't have Noel and Watson.
Where would I target England? I don't really know.
And I'd also
I think it's very much the Springbok style to just go really mass try and just try and do it through the middle. And yeah, I think they'll be buoyed by the fact that three of England's Grand Slam Australia beating pack won't be available.
Yeah.
And Dylan Hartley only just recovering from injury.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd also be winding up Dylan Hartley, something rotten.
That's not hard.
Yeah, not hard at all.
Yeah, thing is, the replacements that they've got, England, they're not exactly lightweight, are they? And in some ways, those replacements might actually be better suited to play a South Africa pack anyway. Because Atwood's massive.
Atwood might be.
Launchbury, he's an absolute monster. Works hard, good carrier.
And if you do bring in Nathan Hughes, which I've previously recommended for Haskell and move Robshaw across, you're increasing the bulk of the pack there.
Yeah, significantly.
Yeah.
Although you're changing the, I think you're changing the way England play if you do that.
Undoubtedly. Yes, definitely.
But I don't think South Africa should really be much of a problem for England, is my opinion.
The form would suggest that. Because South Africa have not had the best year.
Nope.
But then Australia hadn't been having the best year. They were 3 from 10 for the year. They'd won 3 out of 10.
And how many
for the year?
And how many Wales won?
I don't know.
I think they were on eight losses in a row. Wasn't it ridiculous?
Well, they hadn't won against Australia.
Well, no. So obviously they lost against Australia.
Yeah.
They lost the previous 3, so that's 4.
And
they lost against England, that's 5.
Yeah.
I don't know what the last game in the Six Nations was. Was it England?
England was the last game, was it?
Yeah, so that'd be 6. So what, 7? Maybe 7 in a row?
True.
So they're no great shakes.
Yeah. So I would go for an England win.
England win.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think it will be... Well, it's never easy against South Africa. But I'm a little bit more pessimistic than maybe I should be.
It'll be another milestone, another one that Eddie Jones can tick off. 10 years since they beat South Africa, which is unreal, really.
Yeah,
they've played them a bunch of times at Twickenham and still not managed to win. So
they had a draw once, didn't they?
Yeah, a couple of years ago they had a draw. So and they had the, was it 2007 Tour of Hell to South Africa?
I thought Tour of Hell was to Australia.
There's been lots of different tours of hell, haven't there?
They really shouldn't go back there. Okay. Have we got any other business, boys?
Stash tag. Hask tag.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yes. Thank you for listening to this point. This is our little test to just try and reward those most dedicated of Egg Chasers podcast listeners who stick with us right to the bitter end. It could be a sweet ending for you. So we have a stash tag, which if you use and tweet us, then you could win yourself some stash that we have.
Now, I really like my idea. I like all my ideas, as you well know. But I like this one particularly. Hashtag bro science. You've got to give us a story as well.
Well, can we do the hashtag? Because the hashtag should be really unique. So no one else has done the hashtag before. So
Let's have
hashtag boiled egg squats. And then, and then give us a bro science story as well.
The story's got to be good.
Okay, well, how about we'll say everyone that tweets hashtag boiled egg squat. I love that, Phil. is in the hat for a piece of stash. But we want stories of brilliant bro science, and if there's any exceptional work in terms of stories on that front, we could make a separate reward for your efforts there.
Yeah, and also we will be checking to make sure you haven't just lifted them off the internet.
You're going to be running it through some plagiarism software,
are
you?
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Be careful out there, guys. Be vigilant.
Yeah.
Hashtag boiled egg squat.
Perfect.
Love it. So at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. That's where you tag us when you you don't have to tag us, but if you want to tag us when you use the hashtag boiled egg squat, then stash tag, then do that. You can find us on iTunes and on Acast.
Yes. Definitely go and visit our sponsors, Beer 52, Cornerstone, and Set Up a Fantasy League. Do all those things, it'd be great.
Excellent.
Beautiful.
There we go. All right.
Do you know what? I'm looking forward to being back in the dungeon with you in our beautiful British and Irish Lions shirts on Facebook Live next week.
Yeah, shall we do next one? Facebook Live, full kit wankers.
Full kit?
Full kit, boots and everything.
Yeah, if we're doing full kit, we have to be in boots.
And strappy.
Yes. Full kit and boots. Yes.
See you next week, I guess.
See you next one. See you next week, Phil. See you, JB.
Bye.
Bye.
In a bit. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.